All the things that bring us all closer to God. Welcome, Tori. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, we're so grateful to have you on. It's a special day in our liturgical Christian calendar. This is the time of year when we're celebrating a Holy Week, as we are heading up into Easter on this Sunday, and today is Maundy Thursday. Is that a term that you use in your faith tradition? I mean, I didn't even grow up Episcopalian, and I had never even heard of Maundy Thursday until I was much older. Is that something that y'all bandy about?
No, I didn't grow up with that term. My family and I now attend a Presbyterian church, and so I've heard that term a lot over the last few years.
Yeah.
We grew up knowing this as the day of service.
Yes.
You know, the day where he washed the disciples' feet, the day in which he struggled in the Garden of Gethsemane alone, you know, but it didn't have an official Monday, Thursday term to it.
Yeah, and, you know, I was doing my official Wikipedia and online research last night to kind of dig deeper into the etymology behind I got to put that English degree to good use somehow.
Right.
I was looking at the reasoning behind why it's called Maundy Thursday, and I guess there are a couple different schools of thought. Some think that it's the root word is mandate, or the great commandment, where God, Jesus at the Last Supper, you know, he charged his disciples to love others and to serve them. So mandate, that's a commandment, Maundy. And then there's this other kind of deep track interpretation that Maundy has something to do with basket weaving. I don't know. Apparently, the people on Wikipedia think that's kind of universally thrown down. But you know, maybe people who are listening can chime in and let us know what they think about the etymology of the word Maundy. But you know, at the end of the day, what we know about this day in Holy Week is that it's a time where, like you said, Jesus called together his disciples for his last meal, and that's where they broke bread, that's where they drank the wine, and then he asked them to come and pray with him in the Garden of Gethsemane because he knew what was coming next.
Yeah, that was, you know, it was a part of my reading this morning for devotion, six days of Holy Week in the Bible app, and there were a couple of things that stood out to me, one of which was this supper that will never end. Jesus tells them that, like, this will be the last time we drink wine together until that great feast when I bring all of the believers together again. That picture of him painting a vision of the future, knowing that their faith was about to be challenged in 24 hours, watching him be crucified. And then the second of that is just the struggle of Jesus of Nazareth in the garden, right? That transparency and vulnerability, where in my faith growing up, I was taught a lot about, you know, you don't question God.
You got to be strong and you have to be totally sure.
Right. And it was just powerful to watch him struggle and for him to take those conversations back to the God of heaven And to see that there are some places that we have to walk and go that even our closest friends don't have the strength to go with us.
But right.
It's
our
calling.
Could you not stay awake with me?
Right.
Could you not stay awake with me?
Right.
A lot of our churches here in Memphis and, you know, all over the world are going to be commemorating Maundy Thursday this evening with a really solemn prayer service where not only is there, you know, the regular order of worship, but there's also going to be a portion of time where there's feet washing. Mm. And those are times when the, you know, leadership, the member of the clergy, will wash the feet of those who are coming to worship. And it's such a crazy role reversal.
Yeah, it is.
Jesus washed the feet of his disciples the day before his crucifixion. And then he asked them to stay awake with him overnight to pray with him. And of course, we know that that some of them couldn't. They fell asleep.
Absolutely. It is a powerful picture, you're right, of just servant leadership.
Yeah.
You know?
It's, yeah.
And especially in the age of a rock star pastor, right?
Yes,
most
yes.
of us attend churches that have hundreds of members. What a picture it would be to see Pastor Rufus at Hope, yeah. you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Come down and with a towel to ungird himself and to,
yeah.
And to begin to wash the feet of his entire staff like that. That picture is a very humbling picture, especially mm-hmm. in a society where we like to put those who are spiritual on a pedestal. Jesus
yeah,
came
yeah.
down low, you know?
That's, yes, yes. What does servant leadership mean to you? Because you are a leader.
I appreciate that. I do my very best to
yeah.
be a leader, as imperfect as I know that I am. I would say that servant leadership to me is just that. It's a selfless act of giving without expectation of receiving mm-hmm. anything in return.
Yeah.
It's sometimes doing the action that no one else will do as
yeah.
simply as picking up a trash can you see falling outside
yeah.
of the campus
mm-hmm.
or being willing to cut a tree down or
yeah.
it could be serving leadership can be showing the way in a nature that is humble.
Yeah.
And it's not filled with entitlement.
Yeah.
You know, of I shouldn't be doing this because I'm the executive director
exactly.
or CEO, but more or less I should be doing this because of my role as the CEO or executive director. I
yeah.
should be willing to give all of my gifts and talents
yeah.
Back to the King and allow
yes.
him to push him out as he sees.
Yeah. You know? Scott Morris, who is the founder and CEO of Church Health, which is just down the hallway from where we're sitting here right now at WYXR, he, is in a pretty high position. But I remember hearing him say once that if there's an empty toilet paper roll, he's going to refill it.
Hmm.
He's going to refill it.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks a lot to how, who sees that? Well, the people who you are leading see it. And it heralds back to that original person who made, who became incarnate.
Hmm.
And I mean, how God came and he became a person.
Yeah.
How is that? It's quite mind blowing.
Absolutely. You think of the Philippians picture
yeah.
that Paul paints of, here's Jesus having all power, being with God from the beginning, and him being willing to put his universal resume to the side, his
yeah.
deity to the side, in order to serve and to fulfill a mission of humbling, being spat at, being
yeah.
Being bruised for our iniquities. And yet here's the person who's been with God from the beginning.
Yes, yes.
It's just such a picture of humility,
Well, from one person to another, I'm really delighted to start my the triidium of Holy Week with you and I'm
Thank
really
you.
Delighted to be able to chat with you a little bit more
likewise
throughout the morning. Happy Maundy Thursday.
Happy Maundy Thursday to you and
I am,
your listeners.
Yes. We're gonna play some music
okay.
that came out of For the Kingdom.
Okay.
So let's listen.
Let's go, FTK.
Yeah. The rebirth. Another chance. Yahweh, you're my superhero. I'm saying glory to your name, Lord. Glory, glory, glory to your name. Not here to pontificate with you today. It's not been 7 days. My vehicle took 16 shots by my hop. I got a bullet in my neck. It's my blue check.
You got angels watching over thee.
Correct. Holy Spirit filling me like gas cans. This cold world got me feeling like real life Jabari. Only my body would have died. My spirit would have been alive, worshiping my king either way. Glory to his name. It's my plight, it's my aim. With this verse and with my life, I'm connected to heaven through my brother Jesus Christ. Miracle got me feeling like New Testament believers. No death required for us. He already did that through his son Jesus.
You're the king of peace. Take a breath in me. You're the change I seek. You fill my deepest need. So to you I cling. Your good ways, I'll teach my children to say glory to you.
I feel like Jacob as he wrestled with the past, left with a bruise on his hip as a reminder of his shift. Bullet in my neck, it's a gift. I call it my rebirth. God picked me up, dusted me off, reminded me again that I'm a son of a king. Yahweh's love for each one of us is deep. The story of his grace, I'm amazed. Unmerited favor, I should have died. But to Yahweh's eyes, he never sees defeat. Like David in Psalms 23, I was in a dark valley, and Yahweh was there with me. That's got me turnt like Sunday service. All my days, I'll go crazy saying, glory, glory, glory to your name.
To his name.
I am. Y'all produced this song.
Glory to his name.
Tell me about some of the voices that we heard on that track.
So you heard, obviously, my voice. You heard the voice of, let's see, 4 of my 10 children. You heard my 2 twin girls that are 4 years old.
Yeah.
My son Jace, who is 7.
Yeah.
And then my son Jairus, who's a junior here at Crosstown. And then a young lady. Who is a sophomore at Briarcrest Christian who came and volunteered her time to do what was just worship for me. It was therapy for me coming out of the shooting. And so,
yeah, you told me off air that you recorded that track like 2 weeks.
Maybe 2 weeks, yeah.
After you were, you, I mean, we all are miracles, but you really are a miracle. Tell our listeners about what happened to you last December. It's last December, right?
It was December 18th of 2021. My vehicle received 16 shots while in South Memphis, out doing some Christmas shopping. Yeah. And one of those bullets, one of the seven bullets that were aimed at my head, one came through the windshield and struck me in the face. And that bullet now resides in my neck.
Yeah.
And yet 5 hours later, long story short, I was being released from the hospital with the words from the doctors and the nurses that you are the luckiest man alive.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I disagree with them, you know, that it wasn't luck, but that it just showed, you know, the God of heaven's love and mercy, you know. So out of that, for me, I had another level of appreciation for that love, right? It was like my own resurrection experience, so to speak, or walking on water experience, that after being shot, I was able to drive myself to the hospital, to Methodist South, and got some of the care I need, and was then ambulanced to Regional 1, where, again, I was able to get the care that I needed. And by the time the doctors got to see me, they said that my body, the tissue around where the bullet hit, my body had already began to cover the bullet and protect it from any harm it could do me, and that it would be better to leave the bullet in than to take the bullet out. And so I am indeed Yahweh's walking miracle.
Yeah.
And it's given me a new level of appreciation for life.
I mean, that's saying a lot, because your life is one that's, it seems to be really rich and fulfilling, and to find in such a catastrophic, frightening moment in your life, to find God in the middle of that, especially considering all the wonderful things that are going with your family and with your ministry at For the Kingdom. I mean, can I just, I want to have a little piece of that kind of peace.
My wife was a huge part of that, though. I would be remiss in, like, she showed up at the hospital, and about an hour and a half in, I finally got to see her, and you could tell she wanted to jump on that gurney with me, but she kept telling me to keep my eyes open, because God wasn't done with me.
And
before that moment, I was struggling. Like, am I, you know, I had blood flowing from my face like a faucet, and I had no answers. I wasn't sure if I was living or dying. Her words in that moment increased my faith to believe that this wasn't it for me, you know? I want more and more of that every morning, right? Of just that, to feel that love, experience that love at a deeper level that isn't just a ritual, but it's the God of heaven is real and alive and will meet us where we are.
Yeah.
So
we're, the reason that we're here talking today is to talk about the work that you're doing at For the Kingdom with youth, and, you know, creating a place where they're safe and where they can explore the richness of God's kingdom. And I feel like a lot of the questions that I want to discuss with you are around the theme of how can we be modeling the kind of behavior and the kind of wisdom that we want to impart to young people in the world. But I feel like you just being you, it answers the question. But let's start at the very beginning.
Okay.
Because we sort of are starting back from a few months ago with this, you know, this incredible event in your life. Tell me about little Tori.
Well, I came from a broken family, which, you know, unfortunately is the norm today.
Yeah.
I met my parents divorced when I was 2 years old. And I grew up kind of going back and forth between the two of them, seeing the fights between step parents and real parents. And at a young age, I began to reach out to the world, you know, looking for love. And so when I went to school, I was a rebel without a cause.
Yeah.
You know, I was the class clown. I was the kid always getting in trouble. In my sophomore year of high school, I was actually expelled from school. My sophomore year of high school, I was actually expelled from school and was left with nowhere to go to school in Georgia.
Yeah.
And I was hopeless. And
yeah.
I grew up going to church every Sunday. But it was one of those experiences where the pastor was super cool and loving. But the church itself was a outward appearance. You know,
yeah.
Like, hey, mm-hmm. you've got to dress the right way. You've got to say the right things. And so as a young person, I learned to maneuver.
Yeah.
I learned the right lingo. I learned how to debate the things of God. And yet I wasn't close to him at all.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I was 18, living in Detroit, Michigan, right outside of Detroit, Michigan, rather, with my father, who had just overcome drugs and a crack cocaine addiction, and had gotten his life back together. And I was kind of on my final hoorah of a place to stay. And I passed out on the side of a highway from alcohol and drugs at a party in high school. And I could hear Yahweh saying to me, boy, this is your last time. And a few weeks later, I went to then what was called Promise Keepers, which is a convention.
Yeah.
And you've heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it was there that I met Christ.
Yeah.
You know, I'd heard of him and I had walked an aisle, said a prayer prior to then when I was 8 years old. And I was always God curious growing up. I always had lots of God questions. And yet my faith hadn't fully connected with the fact that he was all I needed.
Yeah. And he had always been there.
And that he was always there. Yeah.
And you were like, oh, there you are.
There you are. You're here to rescue me. I do need to be rescued. And you don't need me to change first. You just need me to surrender. And so I walked down at that Detroit Silver Dome where the Detroit Lions play.
Yeah.
And thousands of men were down there. And I was a youngin'. You know, all the counselors were helping someone else. And for the first time in my life, you know, outside of praying for him to help me on a test or something last minute that I hadn't studied for. I prayed to God and I asked him to come into my life and for him to give me a chance. And from there, I my life was different.
Yeah. How did... What's the line that you walked to finally find yourself in Memphis and doing this wonderful work for the kingdom?
Yeah, so I started doing ministry at 18. Right after I preached my first sermon, right before my 19th birthday.
Yeah.
And I began to go to Bible college, and Bible college created an opportunity where I got a 3-year scholarship to Carver Bible College to play basketball and pay for my education. And it was there that I began to meet black and brown men who had made the journey and matriculated through some of the best seminaries in the country and had come back to Atlanta to join Carver Bible College. And I began to learn Greek and Hebrew while I was in Bible college. And I began to learn how to study the scriptures. And my pastor, who had been with me since my adolescence, began to walk with me. And so I had this firm foundation, and I began to walk with God. Graduated from college, moved to Dallas, Texas, and I somewhat became a prodigal again. There were some things in my faith that I was still questioning and didn't really know how to live out a full pure life. And so I walked away from ministry at 24, and I got a job in the oil and gas industry and began to do investments. And when the hurricane happened in Haiti, and I think that was 2011, the Lord used that to grab my heart.
Yeah.
And I wanted to help, and I began to ask God to give me another chance to serve him, that the money I was making and the cars I was driving weren't fulfilling. And and so at that moment, I began to work with a couple organizations, and that led me to starting a ministry that worked with kids and youth basketball in Atlanta, right outside of Atlanta called Alpharetta, Georgia. And it was called Interman Academy. And we began to train and develop young athletes and help young men and young women find college scholarships, but allowed us to use the game of basketball as a vehicle, right? Similar to me, like I had grown up in church, but when I really met my Savior, I wasn't in church.
Definitely. Definitely.
And so that avenue allowed me to rub shoulders with thousands of young people and help hundreds get college scholarships. And it was from there that I found out about a group called the Leadership Foundation. There's one here locally called the Memphis Leadership Foundation, led by a great man by the name of Larry Lloyd. And I was at a party in D.C. one weekend at a board party. And a young woman asked me, she said, They had an organization here in Memphis, and their executive director had just resigned. And she said it was a place created for kids that was 100 acres and it had zip lines. And I'm like, I grabbed my phone immediately. Like, what? There's a place created just for kids?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I started researching and couldn't find anything. And we began to talk. And during that time, I actually had an allergic reaction to something we were eating over dinner. And you seen the movie Hitch before?
It's with been Will a while, Smith, but yeah.
His face started swelling up. And so my face started swelling. And so I had to leave the dinner, but we exchanged numbers. And I went back to my hotel room and took a couple of Benadryl and went to sleep. Next morning, I woke up and I told my wife about this place that we couldn't find anything on. And after I finished my presentations at the board retreat I was at, I found my wife had sent me a picture of a Google image of For the Kingdom.
Yeah.
And a few weeks later, they invited us down for me to do some consulting for them.
Yeah.
This was November of 2019, the week before Thanksgiving. It was bitter cold.
Yeah.
And I had never thought
about it. I remember that. Actually, I remember November of 2019.
Okay.
Because it was, I remember it was one of the last sort of hurrahs before our world got turned upside down that holiday season.
Yeah.
And I do remember it being very cold.
Yeah, very much so. And so I came down and I fell in love. I could hear the voice of God.
If you can fall in love with Memphis in the winter, especially areas that are really there are trees everywhere, it can get kind of depressing. But if you can fall in love, it's like, okay, this is
God, you must be in it.
Yeah, you're here. Yeah.
So I left here and I went to Africa for 2 weeks, and it gave me time just to really pray and begin to ask the Lord for a sign. Like, and every time I prayed about For the Kingdom in Memphis, the Lord began to fill my journal with a vision for what For the Kingdom could become and who we could be. And that at the time I had been traveling with the NBA and junior NBA all around the country, and I could hear the Lord saying, from Memphis, you'll be able to touch the world.
Yes.
And
he's right. Memphis is great.
Yeah, Memphis has been a wonderful place. My family and I are glad we chose 901 for sure.
Yeah. Something you just said really pops out at me. And it's that, you know, God is, Jesus and the Holy Spirit, they do amazing things. And it's not just in church.
That part.
You know, I think that as a kid, I always thought, well, I have to go to church. And off air, we were talking about how I have a 10-year-old at home, and I'm like, okay, well, it's Holy Week, and you have to choose a extracurricular service at church that I need you to go to. And I remember as a kid being like, okay, church, got to go to church. But God, we can worship Him. We can worship Him playing basketball. We can worship Him making music. Mm-hmm. We can worship Him in so many different ways, and we can serve Him in every single thing that we do. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you are doing by working with young people at For the Kingdom. What are you, and specifically, it's a place that's built for children and for young people.
Exactly.
When you survey the youth that For the Kingdom is serving, and as a father, what sort of rises to the top of your list of priorities and the challenges that they're facing as we move into this new chapter of crossing our fingers, knocking on wood, post-pandemic life? And this time when, you know, we are, our young people are really moving into a time that they're reckoning with a lot of the things they learned about us as a society over the last couple of years and the way that we treat each other.
Yeah, I would say that we could have a series.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I would say the top, maybe top three. Would be one that children need to be seen.
Yeah.
You know, often growing up, kids are told to kind of be quiet and to don't be seen or heard, right? It's the best way for you to maneuver. I've seen that lesson taught over and over. Yeah. And I think it's validated through scripture, right?
Like, yeah.
I see the picture, and when I see my family, I mean, I have a family of 10, 8 at home, 8 children still at home. And often there's somebody who's always getting lost in the mix.
Yeah.
Someone who's going unseen. Sometimes as they get older, they don't want you to see them. They don't want you to see their struggle. It's because of the habits in which they get used to out in the world.
Yeah.
So what I say kids need more than anything, they need a safe space.
Yeah.
Right. And I think home has to be the place where you can be yourself. If you need to scream, if you need to shout, if you need to let it out, home has to be a place where you are fully accepted and fully loved. I think that's first and foremost. The home I grew up in, I was fully accepted and fully loved, regardless of who I was. And that didn't come without discipline and whoopings.
But
I was fully accepted and fully loved. And I would say Jesus did that. His disciples brought people to him, and they were like,
Let the little children come unto me.
Like, get the little kids out of here. You need to be dealing with the adult ministry.
Yeah.
And he's like, exactly like you said, let the children come to me. Let them see me and know that I am real and that their issues right now are just as real. And I would say second to that would be being very, very intentional about our faith and sharing our faith, allowing our children to see us having devotion, allow them to see us worship God, allow them to see us broken. You know, instead of us painting this picture for them that we have it together. And I would say that even in community, you know, it's the same. It's when something goes wrong in a community like Raleigh, which, you know, crime is high, poverty is high, broken families are high right now. And we pray and believe, God, that won't always be the case. But that is our current reality. Mm. We believe not addressing those issues are what's causing them to continue. Right.
Yeah.
Like when someone gets shot and we don't stop and we don't pause to address that life has been lost, right?
Yes.
It begins to beget more of the same situations.
And then it helps you, and I think that it also sort of normalizes that this is the way things are with kids.
Just deal with it.
Yeah, it's like this is just, and it's part of our identity.
I hope that
when my kid sees something that's wrong or she sees an injustice or she has somebody dole that out to her, she can say, well, I am a child of God and I don't accept that.
Yeah.
I hope that it's never normalized. And I don't know. That's something that I, as a parent, think about a lot. Like, what can we be doing to stop normalizing hurt and pain to our children?
When Yahweh is a God of healing, and does not want to put a Band-Aid on our wounds, but he wants to heal.
He wants to root it
out.
He
wants to root it out and heal us. And so I think introducing a God like that, and I think what we've learned the most through the pandemic and everything is when we got here, that first year and a half, we were doing a lot just to kind of learn the community and listen and find out what the
needs were. It sounds like you were onboarding right when the world got shut down.
Essentially, so we had a full year. And then as we were going into year two, March of 2020, obviously the world began to
shut down. You're now actually seeing Memphis as it was.
Absolutely.
And you're getting to meet people and know people.
Like we were, that first year we had our head down just to make what we had work. We wanted to be first class hospitality. And so we got cabins and zip lines. And we wanted to make sure that our campus was prepared to be able to host.
Yeah.
Going into year two, we were all about getting into the community. And what we realized, our biggest prayer at the time was, Lord, teach us how to love Raleigh. Teach us how to love Memphis. Because you can't love someone you don't know. And then the pandemic happened. When the pandemic hit, we realized that a lot of our programming was just like, and this is no disrespect to church.
No.
But it was like church. It was like, if you didn't come to us, you didn't know we were there.
Right.
You know?
Right.
When the pandemic happened and we heard the Spirit of God say, feed the block, what it did for us is that it got us off our campus and it got us into multiple apartment complexes and neighborhoods every day, 5 days a week, serving meals, playing games.
Yeah.
And what I realized then was that, again, the gospel, the good news of Jesus, has to be mobile. It has to be willing to go into the tough places. We were going into neighborhoods that were known for violence.
Yes.
And we were setting up tents and speakers and we were giving out meals. And what we found were kids coming to us in droves.
Yeah.
For a deli sandwich.
Exactly. Know? It's like we think about the life of Jesus. We've been focusing on him a lot over the last, you know, several weeks in the season of Lent. And he was moving. He was a mendicant. He was feeding people. He was performing miracles. He was healing. He wasn't saying, hey, here I am.
Catch me next week in Galilee.
Yeah. Like, no. I mean, whenever he did make an appearance, people would show up.
Absolutely.
But he was mobile, and he was bringing people what they needed where they were at.
Yeah.
And I think, oh man, I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but I think that we've made our places our brick and mortars. I think we've kind of made them holy cows.
Absolutely. Like almost, you hate to say it, but almost like idols.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like unless you're coming to this place.
Yeah. Coming to coming to our program.
Or coming to our program at this place.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you meet God, right? When I was growing up, I can remember my parents going to evangelism classes, and then I can remember going to church on Wednesday, them dropping me off and saying I'll be back in an hour and a half, because them and a team would be going out to go do street ministry, to go knock on doors. And in our faith, that's still kind of an anomaly.
Yeah.
We don't really find our faith on the go, and when we do, it's again, we're trying to formalize it into a program. Oh, that's the parachurch ministry's job.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like
mm-hmm.
instead of it being that Matthew 28:19-20, it being, in order for us to reach young people, we must go to their schools and be with them.
Yeah.
Right? We must hear their voices. A lot of times what we do is that we make plans, we build buildings, we build programs.
Yes.
Without ever sitting down
and saying, hey,
what do you need? What do you want from us? Where are you hurting? How can we help you heal? We think we know already, and a lot of times the devil exists in those assumptions.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Christ sits with us. He walks with us. He dwells with us around a table so that he can see who's the deceiver, who's faithful, who talks too much, right? And he's only able to see that by relationship, not just by the fact he's all knowing, you know? And with us not having, you know, omniscience and being able to know all things, it behooves us to really be able to get down with young people in order to allow them to speak. And when they do speak, take the things that they're saying to us to heart.
Yes.
And allow those thoughts to shape the way we maneuver and make plans for them, but not make plans without them.
Right.
And then bring it to them and think, oh, we tried, but they weren't listening.
Yeah, well, yeah. Let's go to a musical track real quick. This is another song that has come out of For the Kingdom.
Yeah. Yahweh's walking miracle here. It's a blessing to be back in the booth. Got my boy Sir Walker with me.
Yes, sir.
MKJ with me. Blue Jay with me. Yeah. I have a dream that I am king, and like Martin, I'm starting a movement. Like Tim Allen, my home first, I'm improving. Like James, I'm schooling. And I promise, oh, I promise, everybody eat, keep your money in your pocket. I'm Yahweh's walking miracle. They tried to put 7 shots in my temple, huh? It's simple. Like Kirk, I put him first. I'm God's property. You can't off me. He loved me. That's part of the dream, that we'll all wake up to the reality that Yahweh loves us. You need to come home to that love. You can pontificate about all you heard and read in a book. I can tell you what I know. That's that Yahweh's love is real. Yeah, MKJ, FTK, yeah, let's continue to talk about that love, you know what I'm talking about, big dreams, you feel me, yeah, 10-15 now, man,
Yeah, yeah, Memphis, Tennessee, growing up, I was hopeless. Now I'm on a mission, big dreams like Joseph. Resting, never sleep on my grizzly like Jaren. Building up community, no longer tearing down. We on our Nehemiah, dwelling in togetherness, lifting our people higher. Occupied, doing business in harmony with Messiah. Big with action, that old talk, we retire with the fire. Got that heat like Tyler, my King Jesus, his will we desire. Yeah.
Multi-talented.
I appreciate it. I mean, appreciate that. That's very kind of you to say.
Right before we went to the break, we were talking about how, you know, we need to be ministering to children and youth where they are,
mm-hmm.
where they are. And I mean, as I listen to the tracks and the music that y'all are creating and the programs that y'all are initiating at For the Kingdom, I see you doing that. And we're talking a little bit about what the church can be doing to serve youth better. And we talked a little bit about that before the break. But do you see, where do you see hope and where do you see success and churches and ministries that are getting it right?
Yeah, I would say that where I see hope is anytime I see collective work happening together. When I see organizations, for instance, coming into Raleigh, like the Literacy Mid-Souths,
yeah.
that are not coming in with their cape on, but they're coming in, talking to those who are already on the ground, finding ways to build mm-hmm. bridges together.
Yeah, that's actually how we got connected.
Absolutely.
That's how the diocese and For the Kingdom got connected. Literacy Mid-South is developing an app that is going to be, it's a literacy app that will be used to help young people sort of bridge between their teachers and their parents in achieving academic excellence.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all are one of the key players that that piece of technology is going to benefit.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's we've got 9 schools in our neighborhood, public schools, Shelby County schools, or excuse me, Memphis Shelby County schools mm-hmm. that we've adopted. And in those schools, the literacy rates have been low. Where I find hope is in the fact that each one of them, due to the relationships with our relationship with Literacy Mid-South and others, we've been able to create new libraries.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that I find hope there, one, because whenever you're able to start changing the subconscious thoughts of children, right,
mm-hmm.
Then you're able to really change their conscious thoughts. If a kid can't read or doesn't have access yeah. to books at their fingertips, i.e. their schools, it's hard for them to dream outside of the neighborhood they're in, right?
Mm.
But books allow you to discover a world that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So I find hope there. I find hope in the practicality of what literacy brings. I also find hope, again, in the partnerships of like Shelby County being open. They pursued us about a year and a half ago in the adoption of our schools to do more. And in that, part of what we asked them for were the learning gardens and the greenhouses
yeah,
that exist
yeah.
in those schools. We believe that the love of Jesus can be seen in our community by helping end childhood hunger.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see that the meals we serve every day, the thousands of meals we serve a week,
yeah.
we see those as being just plugging the dam. But the work of churches, Fellowship Memphis and Hope Church
yeah.
and others, you know, Embassy of Faith right there in our neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
The work that they're doing to not just partner with us, but to build bridges in our community. Give me hope.
Yeah.
We have more churches in our neighborhood than we do have gas stations.
Yeah, right? That sounds right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true of Memphis.
Absolutely.
It is. This is a very church rich city.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They say that the South is the Bible Belt and that Memphis may be the buckle.
Yeah.
You know, like, so that speaks highly of, you know, the religious part that's here.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can see are churches, especially since the pandemic, kind of moving out of what we were just talking about, that, hey, you've got to come to my place.
Yes.
But actually seeking us out to come to our community to help serve. I see people moving to Raleigh to be a part of the change that's needed in our community.
Yeah.
The other thing that gives me hope is that when we came, we said, hey, anywhere we can hire young, we want to hire young.
Good.
And I mean, like, even right here in the radio station with me today, I've got two of the most gifted young people that I've ever met.
Yeah.
And Nick and Jarrell. Jarrell has to be the most gifted marketing coordinator I've ever met under the age of 30. Hands down. Nick,
I'm shocked that he's under 30. He's resourceful, going gangbusters.
Community oriented, he's humble, he's teachable, he's creative, he's passionate, right? And that's what would go against the grain of what people say about our young people today. They would say that they're entitled, only they're looking for a handout. We'll say the same for Nick. I mean, someone who is willing to walk away from a career as a firefighter to do ministry full time.
You know,
like, relationships like that give me hope that the change that we've been believing God for is here.
And
already.
I think that, you know, you strike a chord when you talk about Jarrell and marketing. That's something that, you know, ministry, I am a marketer, I am a communicator, and that's something that we have at the church, or at least the Episcopal Church, has not done well.
Hmm.
Before the pandemic, we have 29 faith communities, Episcopal faith communities here in our Diocese of West Tennessee. Before the pandemic, none of our churches were live streaming.
Wow.
None of them.
Wow.
And I mean, that goes to say that there was not a online ministry. And of course, today it's very different. We had to learn real fast how to do it adequately, and we did it under duress. But now, I think that we're beginning to see and recalibrate. Well, it wasn't just, you know, sick, elderly, or shut-ins who needed those live stream ministries or live stream services. It is people of all age groups.
Absolutely.
But especially young people who are raising up and growing up in a time where a TikTok could speak to them as much as a prayer meeting on a Wednesday night.
Absolutely.
And in fact, it's probably
more so.
More so.
And that's to your point, right? Like, going to where young people are, mm-hmm. instead of trying to make them fit into a box that we've made holy.
Yeah.
Right? The only thing that's holy about the box is that Jesus is there.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, but he also exists in the triangle, or in the TikTok, or he can use absolutely anything, right?
Yeah.
He could use a demon-possessed man like Legion, right? And the healing of him in order to bring glory to his name.
Yeah.
In the same way, he can use absolutely any form, right, or function in order to bring glory, right?
Yeah, he can do it on our podcast.
Absolutely. I see what you did there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're having church right now. This is church right now.
Absolutely. And here we sit in the middle of Crosstown Concourse, mm-hmm. right? And the gospel message is going forward. And as you said, church is happening right now. And we're not in a place that many would deem holy, right? And so I would say, in that same way, that's part of where our thoughts have been. What is the kingdom of God sound? It's the reason why we're into the music, is because there's a rhythm to music. There's a beat. There's something that draws people of all races and creeds in when you talk music and beats. And so we ask ourselves, how can we take the messages that we know need to be heard, and how can we push them out in creative ways in which people will have an appetite for them? Although we can't stand, we partner and help sponsor, it's called She Got Game. It's a semi-pro women's league maybe the best in the country, definitely the Mid-South. And we have a chance to do commentating every few weeks.
I love that.
But they bring in some of the best DJs in the city. And like the music you're playing, we can give it to the DJ and say, hey, you mind playing this for us? And although if they set up a platform and gave me 10, 15 minutes to speak about Christ, most people will probably go to the concession stand. But you can hear it when we put the music on and you look around. They're getting a spiritual vitamin without even knowing it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's where I find hope, is that God, we often look for God to bring the change in, when essentially the change is always there. But we have to have more of a focus on the fact that Jesus is enough.
Yes.
We want to
add
something to it. But if we can get back to the basic foundation, like what this week represents for us in our faith, that Jesus Christ has done the hard work.
Yes.
He gave his life for the sins of all of humanity. If we can learn to rest in that and take that message to the world, he's guaranteed us that he will draw all men to himself.
Yeah. He's done the work.
The work is finished.
It is finished. And we're just, but we've got that mandate.
Absolutely.
And we're going to keep working at it.
Yes, we are.
Tori, it has been such a delight to have you on the show today. We've talked a little bit about this, but on each of our shows, we like to close with this question. What's giving you hope? What's giving you hope today?
I would say a few things. I would say, obviously, my hope in Christ. Prior to being shot, I've been in ministry since 18. Obviously, I took a couple of breaks as a prodigal, running from him.
We're all prodigals.
I agree. But
you
know how we do. Sometimes we measure sin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're into that. So they're worse.
Oh,
than
yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
I've been giving my life away and shouting from the rooftops about his love and his kindness. And there was something in me that felt empty, felt alone, felt unseen, unloved. And I would say what gives me hope today. I mean, I know it may sound weird, but it's the bullet in my neck.
Yeah.
The bullet in my neck is a constant reminder every day of just how detailed his love is.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the other thing that gives me hope is that the change that we need can be found from within.
Yeah.
Right. And the final hope I have is that the God of heaven is alive and well, and that he's willing to come down and meet with us and commune with us. That's what gives me hope, you know. And I know that maybe sounds very traditional or unreal to some, but I would, as I've told my children, if there's something that you need, pray and ask God about it and be quiet. Trust him, ask him. I guarantee that he will show for you, because he does not turn a quiet ear to the prayer of somebody who is calling to him in desperation.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you for the invitation.
This has been Faithfully Memphis for Maundy Thursday of 2022. I am so appreciative that you, Tori, and your staff have spent some time with us. I'm especially thankful for all of our listeners for spending some time with us this morning on the show. This is Faithfully Memphis. We are a podcast and radio program produced by the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. You can learn more about us and find a faith community that is loving, accepting, and wants to meet you where you are on our website, which you can find at edwtn.org. If you've listened to the show today and it speaks to you, I encourage you to share it with a friend who may not have heard it. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, all the usual suspects. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And if you feel so led, I would really appreciate it if you would like us and leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us broaden our net and get more people listening to the good news that we're sharing on the show every week. Again, I'm Emily Austin for the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. And until next time, stay safe and stay positive.